What's up, guys? I'm Jared Lopes, and you're listening to the Dad Tired Podcast, where I'm helping everyday families learn how to follow Jesus in everyday life. How's it going, guys? Jared Lopes with you back here on the Dad Tired Podcast. It's good to be with you. If you're new to the Dad Tired Ministry, welcome. We're glad to have you. We're just a group of guys who are trying to take our faith, our family, and our marriage very seriously. We'd love to have you come hang out with us. You can do that by going to dadtired.com and clicking the community tab. That will show you a list of guys who are meeting around the country and around the world. We'll also, you'll see a link on there that will connect you over to a closed group on Facebook, where we've got a bunch of guys who are constantly pointing each other towards Jesus. And we'd love to have you come be a part of it. So, dadtired.com, click the community tab. Today, we've got a guy, a fellow dad tired guy, Brian Moffitt, who's going to be joining me on the podcast. I'm doing an interview with him, and Brian's going to be sharing a story. And I promise you this, at some point during his story, you are likely going to find yourself relating. So I encourage you to listen, to hear what Brian has to say, and to hear how God has moved in his life. He has an incredibly powerful story. He's an ordinary guy, but God has done some really big things in his life. So I'm excited for him to share his story, for you to hear it and be encouraged by it. Brian's married to his best friend, Shayla. Sounds a lot like my wife, Layla. We kept getting those. We didn't actually get their names mixed up, but we said that there was high probability of us getting the names mixed up. Shayla is his wife's name. They've been married for 17 years. They have two children, Addison, who's 7, and Kaysen, who's 4. He's a runner, man. If you look at his Instagram, he's got like tons of running shoes. He's got, well, we'll talk about that in the podcast. But anyway, Brian's a marathon runner. He's got a goal of running a marathon in all 50 states, plus Washington, D.C. He's made some pretty good progress on that. And in 2015, he and his wife, Shayla, co-founded a ministry called Anguished Hearts after a really just difficult and frustrating season, which he's going to talk about in this interview. They're passionate about Jesus and passionate about seeing people find hope and healing in Jesus. So I promise you, you are going to enjoy today's interview. Sit back, relax, and listen to my interview with Brian Moffitt. Brian, what's up, man? You dad tired?
I am dad tired today, mainly because of that football game last night.
You're a college football fan.
I've got friends in South Carolina and friends in Alabama. So I had interest last night and I stayed up to watch it. So I am dad tired today.
Yeah. Do you normally watch, or were you just happened to watch because you had some friends that were into it?
Yeah, I had more interest obviously last night. But I like watching the big games. I live in Kansas City. We'll probably get into that here in a little bit, but so I'm a Chiefs fan. So be watching the playoffs this weekend.
Dude, I did not know you were a Chiefs fan. Had I known that, I probably would not have you on this podcast.
Do we need to hang up now?
Is that possibly. I'm a Raider fan, and you've really messed with my season this year. And then,
hey, no, that was your quarterback issue. That was nothing to do with the Chiefs at all. That was your quarterback issue.
Well, just know I'll be rooting against you heavily.
Okay, so your two favorite teams are the Raiders and anybody who plays the Chiefs.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be a Seahawks fan now. For the rest of the playoffs.
I bet. Or a Steelers fan this weekend, at least.
I don't like the Steelers either, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So two hated teams battling it out in Kansas City this weekend.
I just want them to both lose.
Okay.
So, dude, speaking of like sports, you're a runner. I was following you on Instagram, and I saw you posted a picture of your closet, and it had like 600 boxes of Nike shoes.
Yeah, something like that. I think there was 20 for me, like 7 for my wife. No, 6 for my wife, 7 for my 7-year-old daughter, and like 1 for my 4-year-old son, all brand new in the box. But I'm a good steward of money. I get them at discounted rates.
That was going to be my next question, man.
Yeah, I don't pay full price.
You should donate to the Dad Tired Podcast Ministry.
You should see my old shoes that look brand new, but they're completely used because of my miles. But yeah, I'm a marathon runner. I've been doing that for about 10 years. I've ran 40 marathons in 39 different states.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so I go through shoes quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, dude, I want to hear your story. In the introduction, I talked about how sometimes it's just important to hear testimonies, to hear what God has done in people's lives, especially for us that have growing up in church, you know, sometimes we just get kind of numb. We kind of assume that either people are Christian or people aren't, and we forget that God actually like saves people. And
yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of the whole point, right?
Right. It's the whole point
of Jesus and church. Yep. Yeah.
And so, really, dude, I just want you to be as raw as you want to be, but can you give us like the 10-minute version of your story?
Yeah, man, I'd love to do that. I think you kind of nailed it. You know, too often as Christians, we want to throw the Bible on somebody or like, hey, come to church with me. But too oftentimes people don't want to hear the Bible. They don't need a Bible verse. They don't want to come to church with you because they're scared or maybe they have had a bad experience in the past, but they can relate to stories. And so I love testimonies. I think they're powerful. And you know, oftentimes people can't relate to Jesus yet, but they can relate to your story. So just for all, you know, listeners out there, just encourage them to share the story.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, man. Dive in. Tell us about you.
Well, as I mentioned, I'm a marathon runner and started doing that about 10 years ago, but, you know, put in a lot of miles each week to run, to get ready for the races that I sign up for. But it's why I run now, but it's not why I ran then, before this marathon journey. My first memories of running, I was around 5 years old, and my parents were separated. We were actually at my grandparents' farm, and I was in his farm shed, and my biological father had some visitation rights. They had to be supervised, and so my grandpa was kind of the mediator, and my biological father brought a pile of gifts for myself and my two brothers, and I was hiding in the back of the farm shed. And I remember just being a scared little boy and running past the gifts, out the door, across the farmyard, and as the tears hit my face, just running as fast as I could into my grandmother's arms. And really, that was the first memories of me running. And it kind of followed me through life, actually, as crazy as that sounds from a five-year-old on. When things got tough, I oftentimes ran away from the situations instead of facing the situation. My mom was remarried a few years later and had a stepfather in my life for about 10 years. And then from the ages of 8 to 18, and then at 18, my mom and my stepfather got a divorce as well. So, you know, my real dad leaves when I'm 5, and then my stepdad leaves when I'm 18. And in the middle of that time period, I actually had met a college student from the local college that in our hometown that became like a big brother to me. He was a father figure, kind of filled that void in my life of that male mentor figure in my life. And he was just somebody that I looked up to, and we had a relationship for about 2 years, and then he died in a car accident when I was 14. So I knew him from 12 to 14. So yeah, I'm just a lot of stuff that happened when I was younger with men. With just male figures, you know, real dad gone at 5, this big brother figure gone when I'm 14, and then my stepfather gone when I was 18. So just didn't have that role model as I went into my adult years. Went to a small college, actually played basketball in college, and met my wife my senior year. Prior to that, I mentioned that I kind of had this pattern of running. Well, it followed me into college. I went to three different colleges in 4 years. Can you believe that? Mm. And still graduated in 4. Like I didn't do the 5-year plan. Nah, I did the 4-year plan.
Yeah.
So 3 colleges in 4 years. And really because, you know, things didn't go my way. So I would just bail. I would, you know, go to another school and things didn't work out. So I went to another school and just this pattern continued. Met my wife, Shayla, when I was a senior. She was a freshman and our relationship was pretty intense from the get go. We actually started dating on Halloween night. We were engaged in July of the next year and then married in December of that year. So 14 months after our first date, we were married. Pretty quick relationship. We were young, 22 and 19. And we grew up together those first few years. But the key point to our marriage story early was when I walked down the aisle and said, I do, I asked her father, can I call you dad? And so that was a big moment for me. Not only did I gain a wife on my wedding day, but I gained a father that played a very important role in my journey. And so that was a great moment for me. And as we began our married life together, we didn't have a lot, but we had each other. We were pretty poor, like most young adults are early in their marriage. Yeah. But we had each other, and that was really enough. We moved around a couple different times just for her to go to school. And you know, I would work at a job for a year, year and a half, and then I'd quit looking for another job. It was kind of like that grass is always greener on the other side.
Right.
So I moved jobs a lot early in our marriage, and that really weighed on us as we kind of worked our way through the first handful of years. I actually lost my job about 4 years into our marriage, and that was rough. That was a very hard time for us because it actually reversed the roles in our marriage. All of a sudden, my wife was a breadwinner. I had no job. I'm at home every day playing video games. She'd come home after a 12-hour day, and she would find her husband drunk. Hmm. It was a deep depression season for me, about 6 months. Went into a deep alcohol addiction during that time. Hmm. And my day consisted of waking up, looking for jobs on the internet in the morning, playing video games in the afternoon while drinking the whole day. Hmm. And so she'd come home to empty cans, empty bottles, dirty dishes, dirty laundry, sometimes with a passed out husband. And that was the beginning of really our difficult times in our marriage. Hmm. That went on for 6 months, finally got a new job. And, you know, we thought, this is it. This is our ticket out of the darkness, right? We got this new job, paid well. My wife's got a great job. We built a new house. We had two dogs, two cats, two nice cars in the driveway. We bought a boat. We had the American dream that we all strive for, or at least that's what the world tells us to strive for. And we had it. And you looked in the dictionary, there would have been a picture of us with the American dream. And that went on for a couple years as I began to travel for my job. I was on the road quite a bit, and I quickly determined that I enjoyed being gone and away from home more than being at home, which isn't real healthy for a marriage relationship. Right. When the husband wants to be gone, and once again, it's that pattern of running. When things got tough, I would run, and so my travel became a priority to me, and I would be gone about every other week for work. And the reason I liked it, Jared, was because I could be somebody different on the road than I had to be at home. Mm. You know, I didn't have somebody to report to. I didn't have to be home at a certain time. I could eat what I want. I could drink what I want. I could watch what I wanted on the TV. And it became this compartmentalizing of my life where I was a completely different person away than I was at home. And that was a really another dark place for me because it caused me to want to be alone. It caused me to want to go run to isolation, to not be with my wife. And finally, after about a year, year and a half of that, we were heading out to my wife's parents' house for Christmas. It's about an 8-hour drive from where we live, but it took about 12 hours. It was in December for Christmas, bad snowstorm. The trip took us 12 hours instead of 8. And on that 12-hour journey across the state of Kansas, for 11 and a half hours, we didn't talk. We didn't say one word to each other. Mm. There was no questions about stopping to eat dinner. There was no questions about stopping to go to the bathroom. It was complete silence for 11 and a half hours.
Wow.
30 minutes away from my parents, or from my wife's parents, from my in-laws, I say these three things to her. I don't love you. I don't want to be with you. I want out.
Wow.
And all the men that are listening are thinking, you idiot. Why would you say that? Right?
Right.
I mean, 30 minutes away from being with in-laws for a week, that was not the wisest move, but it was almost like I couldn't keep it inside anymore. I had to express what I was feeling inside. And so we put on our happy faces for a week with family and acted like nothing was wrong. And we came back home and spent the first 4 months of 2006 being separated under the same roof.
Wow.
Yeah, man, it was rough. I was in the spare bedroom. She was in the master bedroom. We made each other's life as miserable as possible. I mean, it was just the nasty glares we'd give each other. We would leave nasty notes for each other so each other would find, you know, the note on the kitchen counter.
Wow.
I mean, it was ugly. And, you know, I was scared of getting divorced. I had experienced divorce in my childhood. I didn't want to be divorced, but I also didn't want to be with her. Does that make sense? Yep. You know, it's like this, I couldn't have both sides of it,
right.
But that's in my perfect world. It was like, I don't want to be with you, but I also don't want to divorce you. And so almost pushing her hand to file for divorce.
Yeah.
our world kind of came crashing down in April. My grandmother, the same grandmother I mentioned early in my testimony about running across the farmyard into her arms, I get a call that she has pancreatic cancer. Mm. And it shattered my world. I mean, it crushed me. And as I walked through that the next few months in that same farmhouse, holding my grandmother's hands as she would, you know, slowly breathe each day, knowing she would die, whether it be tomorrow or the next day or the next week, I knew at some point she was going to take her last breath. I knew I would never see her again. And that's a tough pill to swallow as a 29-year-old man at the time. I knew that my grandmother was going to heaven. She was a strong Christian woman, and I believe she was going to be in heaven, and I knew that I wasn't going to be. Hmm. And that was really hard for me those last few days watching her. And so as they wheeled her out of the farmhouse after she passed away, there were tears of obviously sorrow of missing her, but there were also tears of fear. Hmm. Of just this reality of, I don't know what's going to happen when I die. You know, I grew up going to church because that's kind of what you did in small town Kansas. You went to church on Sundays, and I grew up knowing who God was and believing there was a God. And actually, I believe that Jesus existed. I believe that he died on the cross for humanity, if that makes sense. Yep. Kind of like, hey, he dies on the cross. We're good people. We all go to heaven. That, right. I knew nothing biblically, but that's just in my mind what I thought. And I knew that the way I was acting inside with the alcohol, with the way I was treating my wife, that the negatives were outweighing the good things, the positives, and my scale was becoming dark. And so therefore I wasn't going to earn my way into heaven anymore. So I'm going to give you just a little bit of time frame again. So this is 2006, April, from January to April, we're separated on the same house under the same roof, April to August, my grandmother's sick. And in that time period, my wife and I kind of get things back together. We knew that family was important. And so we decided, hey, listen, grandma's sick. Shayla is going to be there for me. And we kind of walked through that together, but we really never addressed our problems. We didn't talk about the drinking. We didn't talk about the traveling. We didn't talk about our communication problems. We just picked up the big area rug and swept everything under the rug.
Right.
Grandmother passes away in August. And then about 6 weeks later, Shayla comes home on an October morning. And I knew that by the look on her face, she knew exactly what was going on. So in that time period from July to October, while my grandmother was sick, while I was being this good grandson, watching her and helping her through this difficult time, I was in the middle of an affair with another woman. I was running away from this reality of what was going on. I was pursuing another woman. I was acting one way at home and obviously acting a different way on the road. And this relationship lasted about 3 months until Shayla found out about it. She actually had a conversation with her, which is, if you ask Shayla, it was the most difficult conversation she's ever had.
Wow.
Talking to the woman who has been in the middle of the affair with your husband.
Wow.
And yeah, it's pretty powerful when you hear her story and testimony on how she went through that. So she finds out about the affair, and I knew that we were going to be divorced within, you know, days or weeks. As soon as the papers could be drawn up and finalized, I knew we'd be divorced. And before she left, I told her, I said, Shayla, I need to tell you one more thing. And at this point, Jared, I mean, it's like, what are you going to tell me, right? I mean, I've already found out about the affair. What else can you possibly tell me?
And before you go and tell what you said, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back, and then I want to hear the thing that you were going to tell her after that. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. What's up, guys? Traditionally in the church, men have been the hardest demographic to reach, and yet Dad's Hired Ministry has successfully been able to engage guys from all around the world with the gospel, equipping and encouraging them to be the men that God has designed them to be. We're a nonprofit ministry, which means we rely heavily on your support. If you love this podcast and believe in what we're doing, would you consider giving $19 a month to help us keep going? You can do this by going to dadtired.com/give. Thank you, seriously, for being on this journey with me. And I can't tell you how excited I am to see what God does with our community in the years to come. All right, man. So your wife comes home. You see the look on her face. You know that she has just found out that you've been having an affair. And obviously, I can imagine like the tension, the emotions in the room. All right, I can't really imagine. I just... that had to be so intense of a situation. And then you say, you know, I've got one more thing to tell you.
Yeah. You want to talk about intense. So we all know what sticky notes are, right? I mean, when you have a sticky note, Jared, what do you use a sticky note for?
Reminders.
Yeah. Like you write down something, right? That you just, you want to remember what that moment was like or whatever it might be. Well, we have sticky note moments in life where we wrote down exactly what happened. We remember the sights and the smells and the sounds of that exact moment. Mm-hmm. And we've got these sticky note moments in our mind, in our hearts. Well, that was a sticky note moment that morning. Hmm. I mean, I can remember the smells. I can remember where I was sitting. I can remember the emotions. I mean, it was like it was yesterday, even though it was 10 years ago. And so, yeah, she finds out about the affair. And before you leave, I need to tell you one more thing. And she's like, what possibly could you tell me? And so I said, do you remember I told you about Jonathan? It was the guy that was that role model for me when I was, you know, 12 to 14. And she says, yeah, I know about it. Yeah, he died in a car accident. And, you know, so what about it? I know all about that. And I said, well, there was something I need to tell you about that situation. From the ages of 12 to 14, Jonathan sexually abused me. Mm. And Jared, I was holding on to that secret for 17 years.
Wow.
And I knew in that moment, it was the first time I experienced the Holy Spirit. I didn't know it was the Holy Spirit at the time, but I knew that I had to tell her. And I kept hearing this voice, you have to tell her, you have to tell her. And I'm thinking like, I can't tell her, I can't tell her. And I hear it again, you have to tell her, because if you don't tell her right now before she leaves, you will die with this secret. Mm. And so I did, and I physically got sick. Shayla grabbed the trash can for me, and I share this with her. And she looks at me, Jared, and this is what she said. And this is my first experience of grace. She goes, I will love you as your friend, not as your wife, but I'll love you as your friend and help you get help. Hmm. But you have to get help. Hmm. You want to talk about a woman whose heart is, I mean, it just blows me away to think about that moment. I mean, she could have said good riddance to you and walked out and said, I never want to talk to you again. But she said, I want to help you get help. And she left. I mean, what do I do with that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what do I do then? So what any alcoholic would do, I began drinking that afternoon and drank all evening. And I get a phone call, and the phone, when I pick up my phone, it says dad. Well, I don't have a dad, a biological father. In my phone, dad is Shayla's dad.
Wow.
My father-in-law. And the last person you want to talk to in the middle of an affair would be your father-in-law. So I did as any of your listeners would do. I let the phone call go to voicemail.
Right.
It goes to voicemail. And this is what the message says. Brian, you broke my heart and you broke my daughter's heart, but you are my son. I love you. And if there's ever anything you need in life, I'll be there for you.
Wow.
And he hung up.
Wow.
I mean, who says that?
Wow.
I mean, I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I'm just thinking like, gosh, could I ever do that?
Right.
To a man who broke my daughter's heart. And so, you know, I had nowhere to turn to. I woke up the next morning with a hangover, and I tried to work, and some of your listeners can relate to this. I had these giant alligator tears, just these tears that were flowing, and I couldn't stop them. It wasn't that uncontrollable cry where you can't catch your breath. It was just this deep sorrow, painful cry. And I said, well, this is ridiculous. I can't work like this today. And so I pick up the phone and I called dad and I said, hey dad, you left a message for me last night. And you told me if I ever needed you in life, you'd be there for me. I need you today. Hmm. And we cried on the phone together for 2 hours. And that was the turning point of my life. I mean, it really was that morning. It was October 3rd, 2006, that phone call. And he asked me, he said, do you have a Bible? And I said, well, I do. I had to dust the dust off of it, right? Yeah. But I grabbed a Bible, and he asked me, can you read? I want you to read a psalm. And so I opened my Bible to Psalm, and he asked me to read Psalm 52. Well, he meant Psalm 51, the psalm about David and Bathsheba, about the adultery. But he said 52, and this man is the most spiritual man I know. He never misquotes scripture, except for this moment. Hmm. And I read 52 and it means nothing to me. I mean, literally nothing. I mean, it was like, I could have been reading a foreign language. I'm like, hey, thanks dad. Like just thanks for the encouragement this morning. I mean, who knows what it talked about, but on the opposite page of Psalm 52 was 55. And I began reading Psalm 55 and little did I know that it would have such an impact on my journey 10 years later. But I want to read Psalm 55, verse 4 to you. And it says, "My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death have fallen on me." I mean, God was orchestrating our ministry 10 years ago in the middle of my darkness. My heart is in anguish within me. And I had shared with you just earlier on this call, you know, I was scared of death. I mean, literally scared of death. And I shared that with him. Hey, when my grandmother died, I'm scared of hell. And he says, "Brian, that is not good. And that saddens me." And he asked me, "Will you be around this weekend? Because we're coming up to your house to move Shayla out." And so we agreed to meet. And who would, in the right mind, would meet with her father-in-law during the middle of an affair, right? As I just found out. But yeah. I longed to see my daddy. Mm. You know, it took me back to that little boy who just needed his daddy. And so I longed to see my father, my dad. And so we got together on October 8th, just a few short days later, in the living room of my house. He says, "Brian, we can end all of that fear right here, right now, tonight. That fear of hell, we can end it." And I said, I'm willing to try whatever. You know, do you need me to read more? Do you need me to, whatever you need me to do, I'll do. You know, I'm thinking if I can just do more, be better. And he said, "There's nothing you can do except surrender your life." Hmm. And I said, I'll do that. And we sat there and we prayed together, and I acknowledged my need for a savior. I acknowledged my sin. I acknowledged my desire to follow Jesus. And there was no crashing of thunder. The lights didn't flicker. The house didn't rumble. But Jared, there was this weight that was lifted off of my shoulders in that moment that is unexplainable. You understand it because you have a relationship with Jesus, but it's an unexplainable feeling to somebody who hasn't experienced that before. And and all of a sudden I could breathe again. It was like the foot was lifted off my chest that was preventing me from breathing. And I stopped running. Mm. You know, I'd ran my whole life. I'd ran during college, I ran during my career to new jobs. I ran in my marriage to try to find another woman. I ran to the bottle. I ran to alcohol. And for the first time in my life, I stopped running. And that's really where my story changed. And we can get into it here in a little bit. But that's actually when I started running marathons as well. So he leaves and he tells me, "You're going to have to reboot your life and start reading the Bible, getting in community, finding Christian friends, listening to Christian music." It was almost like deleting everything in my hard drive and rebooting. And that's what he told me. "You're going to have to reboot your entire world." And I did. And I lost friends over this decision, but I gained so much more. He told me, "You're going to have to lose the boat and your cars and your job and your family and everything that you're hanging on to, that you're putting on a pedestal and these idols in your life. You have to lose that to follow Jesus." Hmm. And I did. And I gained so much more. Hmm.
Yeah. So tell me, I mean, there's so many things within your story that guys are going to be able to relate to. That's obvious. That's the second time I've heard your story, and both times, man, it's just as powerful. It leads me, I think I told you this the first time you told me, but it just leads me into worship of Jesus. Like, my heart is just filled with awe that God continues to save people, that he reminds me of the verse where he said, "I didn't come for the healthy, but I came for the sick." Like, I didn't come to condemn, but I came to come and heal. And I came for the broken and for the sick. And you were broken and sick, man. And he came after you. He chased after you.
He did.
Even when you were running away, he chased after you, which is good news. But there's a lot of guys that I imagine can touch somewhere within that story. At some point in your story, you talked about running away or fear of death or not following Jesus, having an affair, alcoholism, running away from jobs, sexual abuse. Like, you covered a lot in there.
Yeah, where do we go? It's just like one after another, right?
Yeah. No,
I was broken, man. I mean, you nailed it.
So what would you tell guys? Like, maybe some guys can relate to all of it or some of it or a piece of that story. Like, there's a guy listening right now as he's working out or he's driving in his car and he feels like he's running, like he's still running. What would you say to that guy?
To stop running. Running is it's exhausting. Mm. And there's men out there that are compartmentalizing their life right now. They may be going to church on a Sunday morning and talking to another woman on Monday. Mm. There's men that are sneaking alcohol or drugs or pornography right now that are addicted to it, that are running away from the reality that it's controlling their life. And so my first comment would be to stop running. And turn around, because Jesus is pursuing you. Mm. Whether you have a relationship with him or not, he is pursuing you. he took care of your sin on the cross. He was buried in a tomb, but he rose again 3 days later so we can have freedom. So we can have life. We last night in our community group, our small group we lead, we talked about the story of Lazarus. And Jesus tells him, come out. Like, hey, I moved the rock. Come out. Yeah. And that's what I would tell the men listening. Come out. Man, there's a Savior that wants to have a relationship with you, that wants to forgive you. And because of that, you can be forgiven with your spouse or your kids or whatever situation where you may feel condemned. Forgiveness can happen.
Mm. You and your wife now run a ministry called Anguished Hearts. Mentioned that in the introduction. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we launched this. We launched Anguished Hearts in October of 2015. And the reason we launched it in October was because we wanted to take back October 2nd. October 2nd, 2006 was the day that my wife came home and found out about the affair. And every year on the calendar from 2006 on, it was almost like that big elephant in the room, mm-hmm. right? I mean, October 2nd is coming up and we kind of look at it and we ignore the day and we move on. Well, when we knew that God was calling us to a ministry and that we wanted to do something, we had to do something with our story to encourage marriages. It's not a marriage ministry, but it's a marriage for the broken. Our mission statement is we exist to lead broken people into a powerful relationship with Jesus. And so that covers anyone who's broken, yeah. which is all of us. And we knew we needed to do something. And as we looked at a launch date, we picked October 2nd, 2015 as our launch date to reclaim that date. October 2nd is a day that we can celebrate as an anniversary of Anguished Hearts. And so, yeah, man, it's been a crazy journey so far, and we do a lot of different things within the ministry.
There's going to be guys that their heart is pounding a little bit as they hear your story and they hear you say stop running, and they're going to need the courage and the support. How can guys get in touch with you if they related to you, if they feel connected to your story? Is there a way the guys can connect with you online?
Yeah, absolutely. So our website is anguishhearts.com. Our Facebook is /anguishedhearts. All the social media, Twitter, Instagram, it's at Anguished Hearts. So yeah, they can contact me there. They can email me at info@anguishedhearts.com, and then I can respond to that. But yeah, just reach out. And whether it's somebody in your community, it's a family member, maybe it's somebody at your church, just stop running. I want to mention just a couple quick things on the topics, and I know we're probably running short on time, but you know, we talked about the abuse, and Jared, I want to talk specifically to that man that's listening right now that's been abused in their past. Hmm. I want to tell them that I'm sorry and that it wasn't your fault. Hmm. I'm sorry and it was not your fault. Because too often, Satan wants to convince us that it was our fault, that we could have stopped it. I mean, I was a 12-year-old little boy. Yeah. I mean, in reality, I was a baby, right? Yeah. I mean, a 12-year-old innocent child whose innocence was taken away because of the needs of another human being, unfortunately. And so I want to tell that man that's listening, it was not your fault, and tell somebody. I held on to my secret for 17 years, and if my story can encourage you to tell someone, oh, man, I encourage you. Tell me. I mean, email me. Tell me. I'll be the first person that'll listen. Mm. Tell your wife. Tell your pastor, because, man, it was not your fault, and you can be healed from this. I'm living proof you can be healed. And the second group of people, I want to talk specifically to the man who's dealing with an addiction. We didn't really finish up that piece of the story, but it was about 15 months after my wife found out about the affair, after giving my life to Christ, I thought I could control my alcohol addiction. And so we would drink socially, drink while watching a ball game, you know, drink while barbecuing in the backyard, glass of wine with dinner. And I controlled that for about 15 months until January 30th. Of 2008, so just another 15 months after the decision to follow Jesus, I got really drunk once again. And I knew the old Brian had creeped back in for a moment. And it was in that moment that I was actually listening to a Jeremy Riddle song called Sweetly Broken. Many of your listeners might be familiar with that. And it says, at the cross you beckon me. And I heard Jesus tell me, you gave your life to me 14, 15 months ago, but you did not give this to me. Leave your addiction at the cross, and I will bear your addiction for you. Mm. And here in just a couple short weeks, I will celebrate 9 years of being completely sober.
Wow.
Not one drip of alcohol. So to the man who's struggling with the addiction, the alcohol addiction, the drug addiction, the pornography addiction, you can be healed, and it can start today. I mean, today, and that's the beauty of the gospel, is the gospel is ongoing every day. Pick up our cross daily to follow Jesus. The gospel has saving power every day, and we forget that as believers, right? I mean, we think like, oh, we were saved, and that was the point of the gospel. No, the gospel is there to save us every day of our brokenness, and so just want to say that to the man struggling with the addiction as well.
Yeah. I just heard somebody say the other day that the evidence of salvation is not that you stop sinning, but the evidence of salvation is that you continue to hate your sin and you continue to take up your cross and repent and to live in grace. And so, for those that are like comfortable and have kind of maintained a lifestyle of being comfortable in their sin, like that's where things get dangerous. But it's, I always say this, like God isn't looking for perfect men. He's just looking for humble ones, men that will continue to take up their cross, to repent, to confess, to move forward. So dude, your story is so powerful and encouraging, man. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to come on and be vulnerable and to share your heart and to give hope to guys that are feeling hopeless.
Oh man. Thank you. It's my pleasure. And I love what you guys are doing. Dad Tired is awesome. I love following your podcast and keep it up. And to those men out there, man, follow Jesus, right? I mean, it's such a powerful thing, but it causes us to feel like we men don't want to surrender. Like we have to be strong, and it's not cool or whatever you want to call it to love Jesus. But oh, man, you need to follow, right?
Yeah.
Fired up.
Dude, thank you for the listeners. Get in touch with Brian. Get in touch with Anguished Hearts and what they're doing there. If you are feeling any of what he has shared today and you feel like, I love when you said, let me be the first one that you reach out to. So listeners, like, take him up on that. If that's you, take him up on that. Shoot him an email. Get in touch. You're part of all the Dad Tired stuff. So if guys are already in the Dad Tired groups, they can connect with you that way as well. But dude, thank you again. Hopefully we can get you back on the podcast and hear a little bit more. I know I cut you short because of time, but thank you again for hanging out with us today.
Hey, no problem. Thank you, Jared. Have a great day.
You too, man. Later.